This is CRNH on KXL. I am Chris Ryan. Appreciate you joining us for the show. This hour, the program brought to you by Riverbend Community Mental Health, as well as the Prescription Center. And this segment of the show brought to you by Rath Young and Pignatelli, a national impact that's unique in New Hampshire. More information, check out rathlaw.com. Rath Young and Pignatelli, proud sponsors of political interviews here on the show. Welcome to the program right now, Chris Pappas, Congressman of the 1st Congressional District, to talk about an agreement which was reached in regards to the coronavirus stimulus funding. We'll get some details on what's in the legislation and what's next from the Congressman here. How are you?
Good morning, Chris. Great to be with you.
Appreciate joining us for the show. So we heard about this deal late Sunday that, in fact, it has come to place. We're waiting for a long period of time to see if, in fact, we would see something. And to your knowledge, what is in the legislation, and what are your thoughts on how the process now moves forward?
Well, I think there's a lot to be happy about that's included in the bill, and I still think we have to look at this as an ongoing need that we have to meet. And no bill is going to be perfect, no bill is going to deal with every topic, and no bill is going to get us to the end of this pandemic. But this is a significant down payment on efforts to make sure we're ramping up our ability to test, treat, trace, and distribute the vaccine and provide economic relief for people who need it. So there are direct checks to individuals contained in the bill, $600 checks per person, also per child. So say a family of four could get $2,400 in direct payments out of this bill. There's enhanced unemployment benefits. You probably heard about the expiration of benefits just after Christmas. This needed to be solved this week. I'm glad we can do that. And in addition to extending unemployment, there's an enhanced $300 federal benefit that will help, get people closer to what they were earning at their job before they were laid off or had their hours reduced. There's significant small business support in the bill, so another round of Paycheck Protection Program loans targeted at businesses who are losing 25% or more of revenue and have 300 or fewer employees. It's good news that it's targeted at our smallest businesses who are struggling. And in addition to that, there's money that goes out through community lenders and local credit unions and banks to make sure that the help is getting to the smallest businesses who, might not have, relationships with some of the larger banks in the country. There's rental assistance for people, $25 billion in direct rental assistance, and the eviction moratorium is extended end of January. That's significant because the new administration will be able to deal with that administratively. If they want to extend it beyond January 31st, they'll have the ability to do that when they come into office. Additional funding for child care and for nutrition programs, which is really important. There's a 15% bump for the SNAP program. We know that a lot of people are struggling. Our food bank and food pantries are seeing lots of new customers right now, so we've got to make sure that our nutrition programs are strong. And then just the efforts around testing, treatment, tracing, getting money to states for vaccine deployment. There's $69 billion in here to help ramp those efforts up. So I think taken on balance, there's a lot to like of in a bill and a lot that's really going to make a difference here, especially over these next few months. So the task today is to pass it. We haven't actually received legislative language yet. They've been working over the night to actually put the deal into legislation. So we expect a series of votes today, and we hope by the end of the day, probably by about 5 o'clock, this will be passed by the House.
So a lot of questions in regards to this, and I understand there are not a lot of answers because, as you mentioned, you have not seen the legislation aspect. But I guess we'll start there. I mean, how much concern do you have about the fact that there's obviously things that need to be done? And these things need to be passed. They need to get to the front lines. And there's aspects of this which are obviously incredibly significant. But you also don't know exactly what is in the legislation at this point in time. And you're kind of in a position where you have to support it.
Well, we've got a detailed outline from leadership. And, they've been updating us every step of the way in terms of what priorities they've been able to negotiate as part of the deal. And we've certainly been, not shy about making sure that we're communicating what's important to the people of New Hampshire. So we do have to work to understand what's in it this morning before an ultimate vote on it. But if it looks the way the outlines have sketched it, I think this is a good deal for the people of New Hampshire and the people of this country. As I said, we've got to focus on what's in here and maybe not what's missing, because there will be other bites at the apple and opportunities to get further legislation through. The frustrating part of this all, obviously, is it shouldn't have taken this amount
exactly.
of time.
Exactly. And it's tough because, like,
yeah.
This is how everything always seems to go in Congress, where you're up against a wall, you're up against a deadline, and, like, here's the bill, you're going to get it, you know, a little bit later today, and you know you need to support it, but again, it's you haven't mm-hmm. seen it yet, and I just can imagine that's extremely frustrating on your part, where this has been going on since May, and here we are up against a wall where they're pushing forward, legislation to keep the government operational, and mm-hmm. this is expected to be a part of that larger funding bill, and it's just extremely frustrating to watch how this process works, and I'm sure it's frustrating for you to be a part of it.
What we're going to have in front of us is essentially the second largest bill ever considered by Congress in history, the first being the CARES Act earlier in the year. This is even bigger than the stimulus bill passed at the beginning of Obama's administration. So this is quite significant. We do have some good information about what's in it, but we've got to look at the legislative language before, being confident about it. But ultimately, this is a negotiated compromise. This is exactly how things should happen, but they shouldn't take this long, and it shouldn't be this tortured, and it shouldn't just have to wait to the 11th hour before the holiday break to make it happen. We should have been doing this months ago and continuing to revisit it throughout the year. Obviously, we're on the virus's timeline. We're not on some, legislative timeline or, just sort of calendar year timeline. We're at the mercy of this virus. We know people are hurting. 200,000 Americans are getting infected every day. We've lost well over 300,000 people. Shame on, all those who could have brought a solution to us quicker for not doing that. But we certainly have to get something done here so that we can continue to, find a bridge to the next year and an ability to refine these efforts over time.
When we spoke on Wednesday, there was two separate parts of the legislation where I believe it was around $700 billion was going to be for, what you discussed. And an inclusion in that has been the $600 direct payment, which is new and, as I've talked about before, I think needed to give to Americans to make their own decisions as to where they invest that $600. And I think it's just a huge necessity for that to take place. But that being said, that was added in, and Republicans were against that. There was the $700 billion, which were agreed upon. Then there was about $250 billion, which was going to state and local governments, was also going to be pushed forward for litigation. And COVID-19 litigation was a part of the separate piece. So those seemingly have been combined. How were things able to maturate to the point where an agreement could be reached where everything was a part of this? And it seems that the direct payment is in it, which Republicans didn't want initially. Any knowledge as to how this came together, where it seemed like you're going to have two separate pieces, no direct payment, and now everything is together as one and includes direct payment?
Well, I think that the framework that the bipartisan group of House and Senate members pushed forward was the catalyst to open up this new round of negotiations. And they did some great work and should be credited with helping to lay the foundation for this. But, by no means is that bill that they put out on the podium in that press conference exactly everything that's in here. So I think when leadership took hold of the negotiations, it took a little bit of a different turn. It provided some opportunities to make some improvements in things like, ensuring that direct payments are there, money for nutrition assistance, money for schools, money for mental health, because we know the addiction crisis and mental health continues to be a growing issue during this pandemic. So those were some wins that came out of that further negotiation. Obviously, two of the big areas that were left out in the final analysis are the issue of liability protection for businesses, as well as direct support for state and local government. Now, there's funding that does flow to states and municipalities as part of this bill. Just think of the money for testing and public health and vaccine preparedness. That will help relieve some of the burden that states are experiencing, but it's not going to allow them to deal with the budgetary issues that they're facing. So that's something that's over the horizon. But what, you know, I think there could have been a trade on that, but what McConnell was looking for was something that was a liability protection that went well beyond COVID-19. They were looking to open up Pandora's box and do tort reform on a broad scale, dealing with issues that had nothing to do with this pandemic. And that's not appropriate or the place to do it, especially when you're putting people essentially at risk who are either on the job or might be, you know, visiting a business. You know, we want to support those businesses that are following the rules and are doing everything right. But if there's gross negligence out there, you know, people are putting others at risk, especially with issues that don't have to deal with this pandemic, I don't think there's any reason to go down that route. So I think that's why that piece fell apart. But there will be other opportunities to revisit that in the future. One of the late snags that was introduced was the issue that Senator Toomey from Pennsylvania brought up. He wanted to make sure that all the Fed programs at that supported you know, businesses and our economy were wound down at the end of the year, and that the Biden administration essentially wouldn't be able to use those tools. And he wanted to go as far as basically changing the law that had been in existence since the Great Depression about some of the emergency powers that the Fed has to do this emergency lending. So I think there was a pushback against that. That language was moderated, and they were able to come to some sort of a consensus on it. But it's just crazy how, you know, something can be introduced at the very last minute and sort of gum up the works. And I think that's why this was delayed another 2 or 3 days, and we weren't able to get a deal, say, on Friday or earlier on Saturday.
That is Congressman Chris Pappas joining us here on CRNH and KXL. This hour, the show is presented by Riverbend Community Mental Health as well as the Prescription Center. And this segment of the program is brought to you by Rath Young and Pignatelli. Members of Congress have been receiving the COVID-19 vaccine. I'm curious as to whether or not you've gotten it yet, A, and B, do you feel it is appropriate for members of Congress to be receiving the vaccine before frontline workers in hospitals, long-term care facilities, grocery stores, and other areas?
Look, the vaccine is safe and effective. There are two that have received emergency approval, and hopefully more on the way. And this comes at such an important time. So the scenes around the country of our frontline healthcare workers getting vaccinated, this is good news for our country. And it means that though it is far off and we have to continue to follow all the public health guidelines, that there is some light at the end of the tunnel. That's why we've got to ramp up efforts to make sure this can get out there as quickly as possible. Now, there is a phased approach to this. Different people will fall into different phases depending on the availability of doses as we move forward. You know, right now the focus is on our most vulnerable residents, people with comorbidities, our frontline healthcare workers, and I feel those people should be at the front of the line. There was an executive order that was issued by the administration that considers members of Congress at in this first phase, essentially, and so doses were made available to members. I'm not going to take one because I feel that because the supply is limited, I'd rather see a frontline worker here at the Capitol get access to that dose as opposed to me. You know, I'm someone who could work remotely. I could actually vote from home based on the rules of Congress, and I don't fall into one of those vulnerable groups or have circumstances like a family member at home that I'm worried about protecting. So I'm going to wait till the general population has access to this. I think we've got to focus on how, you know, those who are on the job today, who are vulnerable to the most severe symptoms of COVID-19, are first in line and get priority.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. It was frustrating to see individuals receive the vaccine who are members of Congress who, you know, as you mentioned, they didn't, quote unquote, cut the line as the executive order allowed for it to take place. But I feel that it's not an appropriate step to be taken for individuals such as yourself or others to, you know, go ahead of individuals working in hospitals on the front lines. To my knowledge, Elliott and Catholic and Concord Hospital all received about 300 of the vaccine, and there are many workers who have not received it yet there. And I just don't feel from an optics standpoint that it is something that is appropriate for members of Congress to do that. I think that the president and vice president, as well as the president-elect, and even Speaker Pelosi and Leader McConnell, it's appropriate for them to get it to signal the fact that it is safe and should be taken by individuals who have the opportunity to do so. But I appreciate the fact that you you made, in my view, the right call on that.
Well, and we had a telephone town hall this week with the deputy state epidemiologist and someone from Health and Human Services who were talking about vaccine preparedness in New Hampshire. And this is a long process. And so I think we've got to set expectations right for the general public about the different phases we're going through here and how, you know, important continued vaccine production is and the state's preparedness to distribute this to make sure that every group gets their chance. But it is going to be many months, and that's why we've got to sustain all the other efforts that are so important to keep people safe, even for those people who have been vaccinated. So, you know, we've got to continue to work to understand this and, you know, appreciate the process. But I think it is just unacceptable that especially some people who were literally holding up relief and an ability to distribute a vaccine for months and months received their shot at the Capitol on Friday before we even had a deal on this latest round. It just shows that I think some people are out of touch, and I think we really should be making sure we're protecting, you know, those who are susceptible to really get sick from COVID, have comorbidities, or are frontline workers that are showing up each and every day to care for people. We've got to make sure that they're protected.
One final thing, and it's obviously an important one. There's so many incredibly significant things taking place in our nation right now. And obviously the results from the Electoral College head to Congress on January the 5th. And there have been some rumblings that Republicans plan to try some different things in order to keep those results from becoming official. The leader of the Republican Party in the United States Senate, Mitch McConnell, has overtly said that both publicly and privately, he does not want that to take place. And we also have, you know, the president reportedly discussing martial law with Michael Flynn in the Oval Office. And it's not a stretch to believe that that took place, given that Michael Flynn was discussing martial law and the president implementing it on television, despite the fact that the president says that they weren't discussing that in a tweet. So those two things, the Electoral College results coming to Congress on January the 5th, and what do you think happens there? And the president discussing martial law seemingly with Michael Flynn and what that means.
Well, I think, look, the reports of what the president has done, and even just his public statements about the election, are seeking to do one thing, and that's to undermine confidence in the democratic process and to try to convince supporters of President Trump that somehow they were cheated out of their vote, out of an election victory for President Trump. We know that's not the case. And this is well documented. That's why all 50 states have certified their election results. That's why the Electoral College voted exactly as we thought they would. And those Electoral College votes will soon be delivered to Congress. We'll open them up and we'll have a chance for any sort of last minute objections to it. There will be a few people who object on the House side, certainly, and it appears on the Senate side, there will be someone who agrees. That will trigger potentially a process whereby, both bodies will have to take some time to deliberate and then take a vote. This has happened in the past. I look at this as a smaller hurdle that we have to get over to make sure that we're confirming that Joe Biden was the duly elected president of the United States on November 3rd. And I think we'll get there. I think enough Republicans now, including the Senate Majority Leader, have accepted the results of the election. Finally, but you know, all this time that is spent on trying to convince people otherwise is just does a disservice to our democracy and to our ability to actually get some things done over the next couple of years. So I think it's deeply concerning, and I think this continued effort, Senator Shaheen said borders on sedition. I would agree with her strong comments on that. Because people know full well who was elected on November 3rd, and they're still at this. And I think there's no question about the election outcome. They do have one last ditch effort that they can pursue when the Electoral College votes are open. I think they'll take full advantage of that. But I think a bipartisan majority of the House and Senate will shut that down.
As always, Chris, joining us for the program.
Thanks, Chris. Take care.
All right, that is Congressman Chris Pappas joining us here on CRNH on KXL this hour. The show is presented by Riverbend Community Mental Health as well as the Prescription Center, and this segment of the show brought to you by Rath Young and Pignatelli.